B3. Number 14A.
We are still in the 13th chapter on teaching, where we saw that there are certain qualities necessary in order to qualify a scientist to be a scientist that heals. In qualifying the scientist, Mrs. Eddy said that it is really his attitude towards science that is necessary, studying, abiding strictly by the rules, not falling away from the rules. You can see here the unity of practice and principle that says if you have a principle, then your practice as a scientist consists in abiding to that principle, strictly abiding by the teachings of Christian Science, to conform really to God's teaching, and then speaks about the ethics of Christian Science, that all is mind. Therefore, the ethics is to do right, to act right. Now you see, that's the ethics of Christian Science, that is, acting right and doing right can no more be measured by a moral standard. It's no more that where we say, a Christian Scientist should behave like this and that she shouldn't behave like that. That we judge not, but that we have only one standard according to which a spiritual scientific healing power is brought out, and that is, do we start from mind, and let mind act through us, then we act rightly, then we do rightly. So we cannot compare that right action from a moral human standard. And this is the great difficulty. We have been brought up as Christians and have been brought up to judge what is Christian, what is good, and what is ethical, and what is moral, etc., etc. And all that has now to be overthrown, really, in our consciousness, and say, whoever acts from principle acts rightly, no matter what the situation then is. Then Jesus can go to the taxpayer and to the sinners and to Mary Magdalene. He can attract even the harlot, because he went out from mind. And therefore, through that, in that way, he could also be the healer of Mary Magdalene. So we must see that acting rightly is not the moral quality, but the one mind action. So that's why she says, that as that which heals is to utilize the moral might of mind. It's another moral might than the Christian ethics. The moral mind of a good Christian, a good Puritarian, a good Quaker, or a good so-and-so, is a different moral than the moral might of mind. This is quite a different thing. So, can you see, we have to be careful in using these terms, that in reading them we are not actually mixing up a term like moral might, which we associate with a completely different system of reference, with, say, a system of reference of human morals, and say, this must be the action of mind. No. There is mind, and you go out from mind, and you stay within the realm of mind, and what mind dictates us to do, do it. Do it. I can't just quite quote here, it just came into my mind, that somewhere Mrs. Eddy says that we should not breathe an immoral atmosphere unless it is to heal it. You see? So it means that if mind guides us into such an atmosphere, we should go, or we can't heal it. If we stay out, we can't heal it. And this is so true about so many things in the human standard of ethics, that we just, in a way, it's difficult here. It's, I would say, drop it, but drop it only then when you can replace it through the higher ethics of mind. keep it if you don't, if we can't replace it by higher ethics. But if we can, as a scientist, use the higher ethic, drop the whole standard of moral. That's terrific. Because she said her ethic is that mind is all. And mind has not the two-valued logic which always judges this is right and this is wrong. This is done and this is not done. This is good and this is evil. The ethics of Christian Science of the one mind has an infinite logic. And therefore, every case has its logic of its own, the logic of event. Therefore, being guided by that one mind, really, one comes into situations which one wouldn't go into and come into if one would act on a humanly moral basis. He says that the opposite of a scientist's attitude is naturally an unscientific attitude. Therefore, she brings in qualities which are the opposite of scientificalness, like doubting trust. You see, this is not a false Christian attitude. It's a false scientific attitude. The scientist knows that he relies on a principle and on law, and that it is absolutely immoral, so to say, not to rely on God. But in the world, you are not called that you are immoral if you don't rely on God. Absolutely not. You are a very honored citizen if you don't rely on God. But not in Christian Science. You have to rely, fully rely on God. Then only you are showing forth the ethics of Christian Science. Again, can you see what we have seen? That truth makes error more and less. Here it's making it much more. Now suddenly we find that things that the human world calls normal and absolutely moral, that is not being punished, we suddenly find out that this is immoral. It's absolutely immoral for a scientist not to trust the laws. That's immoral for a scientist. For a Christian it isn't. You see that we get a completely new standard, a new... The whole world, you know, accepts things which, from the point of view of science, you would say, this is really bad. This is really bad. To take recourse to other healing methods is one of these errors. That's not doing right. Well, in the world, it is absolutely honored that you go from one healing method to the other until you find what you like. Isn't it? You are not punished for it. There is no state law that says you have to go to prison if you go to another healing method. But in Christian Science, this is unethical. It's immoral. It's immoral when one knows that there is only one principle, and that principle is the principle which we have seen in one of the chapters, in the chapter on physiology, that with God all things are possible. That was the seventh chapter. It is established there. So if we go to others, actually we break the highest law. We break it, you see. We trespass on the law of God, and therefore it's unethical. So it's unethical for a scientist, so to say, to take recourse on other healing methods of doubting trust. Smatterers of Christian Science cannot heal. See, that's not ethical to be a smatterer. You are nobody in the world would feel that you are immoral and that you should be punished for it if you are a smatterer in your field. But in science it is. Science it is. So this chapter, it's a terrific chapter, you know, when you read that 13th chapter anew, it's quite an impressive chapter. She says, if we go out from another standpoint, if we go out from a material standpoint, you cannot heal. That's not ethical. It's not ethical to go out from a material standpoint. In the world, it's accepted. It's honored. You should do it. That's how you make the dollars. The more you make, the more honored you are in the society. But here, in science, it is not so. It's a completely different moral which we touch. Because only when we go out from the spiritual standpoint, we can heal, we can save, we can help. Therefore, only then are we obeying the command of God. Only then are we doing what she says, acting right, doing right, to be right oneself. You see? That heals. Therefore, the moment we say, oh, well, Christian Science is very nice, tonight I'm going to study a little bit about it, and before I go to bed I read a bit, and then I just hit the pillow, and then I go to sleep, and all the rest of the day is another world. That's not what the 13th chapter teaches. It's one world, and it's the principle of that one world that applies from morning to night. It's an attitude. So going out from a material standpoint, from a limited standpoint, is sin. It's punishable. And actually it is punished in the long run. Because whenever we go out from a material standpoint, it doesn't work. Finally, it doesn't work. Isn't it terrific what that chapter tries to show? That new moral, that new ethics. Yes. So, how shall we epitomize it? Perhaps in order that you that we remember what is in it, we could again perhaps ask first a question. What qualifies a Christian Scientist to heal? What qualifies a Christian Scientist to heal? Answer: strictly abiding by the ethics of Christian Science. Strictly abiding by the ethics of Christian Science. So it's interesting to compare this chapter with the 11th chapter, because there too we were asking what qualities are necessary for a Christian. What qualities are necessary to put on to be Christ-like? Here it is, to be scientist-like, to be science-like. It's a higher demand here, and so also the answer is here very different. So in this way we begin to differentiate between these chapters and the importance of these chapters. Let's get to the next chapter, recapitulation. It's a very important chapter in the teaching of Christian Science. It has 33 pages, but only actually a few references on healing. And all these references are again very different than what we had up to now. And here she wants to show that Christian Science heals. A Christian Science heals and proves itself really through metaphysical healing. You remember up to now we had usually that truth heals through mind, that establishing the truth in the minds of the patient heals, was showing really the Christ truth as healing, and now suddenly she uses something else to show, to state what heals. Now it's suddenly Christian Science that heals. In the 6th chapter, she took up for the first time this, that Christian Science presents the principle of healing. There it only said, I present the principle of healing, and then said that principle of healing is truth healing through mind. But now she says, look here, Christian Science heals. Christian Science heals. So she would say, Christ truth comes to heal sickness through what? No more through mind, as we had it in the sixth chapter, but through Christian Science. Through Christian Science. She says, Christian Science is the law of truth which heals. Can you now hear? In the Christ verticals, we had truth heals through mind. Now she says, Christian Science is that law of truth which heals. You begin to hear what she's saying here? Here she begins to say that truth is a science. That you can't just say truth as if it would just be an amorphous concept, truth. There it is, there it stands, truth, truth. Huh? What is truth? Truth is a whole structure. Huh? Truth is a whole structure which can be interpreted in its science. So you have to know the whole structure of Christian Science in order to have just one thing, namely truth, which heals. Do you hear what happens? Huh? She really lifts now in this science chapter, she lifts now the Christianly sense out of itself and says, that's all right, the truth heals, but what on earth is truth? That truth is a science, and therefore you have to learn that science. And when you have learned that science, then you have the truth that in the column of the second column heals. She says, nothing but truth or mind can heal by science. You hear? If she would have said, nothing but truth or mind can heal, full stop, we would feel this really belongs to the Christ chapters. There it has its place value. But the moment she says, by science, she puts that whole Christ idea, right into the science, that's why it's science as the Christ, into a science concept and says, after all, that truth is not just a term, just not one finite concept called truth. That truth is the whole teaching of Christian Science. And so we begin to feel, oh, I see, recapitulation tells us really in order to heal you have to know that whole science of Christian Science, because then you have the truth that heals. Or else, why should we study Christian Science as a science if we just would know truth heals through mind? So we just would have to know truth heals through mind. All right, truth. Huh? God heals through mind. All right, that's fine. Huh? So here in this last column, she really lifts that whole mystery of healing out of the mysterious sense and mystical sense right out and says, actually, behind it is a whole science, so better learn it. She says, science heals the sick here. Christian Science makes disease appear more real and more unreal. Sorry, I quoted it wrongly. Huh? Christian Science makes disease appear more and more unreal. She asks us to prove the rule and principle of Christian Science or metaphysical healing. A correct view of man heals the sick in science. Can you hear? Practically every statement here in this chapter is coupled with Christian Science or with science, with metaphysics, shows that's the truth. Beautiful. Beautiful how that whole melody, that whole symphony swells up and up and up, and when it comes to the 13th chapter, it just gives a completely new aspect and begins to shout out and say, look here, you have another way of looking at it. It's mind's way of doing right, and not humans, Christians doing right. It's mind that is always right, and that is alone healing. Whatever mind does, that is healing. Don't ask anybody and anything if it's right or wrong. Mind knows what is wrong. And then spells up and says, but you know, this mind is like a Bach. It's a science. It's so classified and categorized so that it has a science and a structure within itself. It's so pure then and so full. And then she says, oh no, we must first make an epitome to this before we go to the next chapter. We could perhaps call it this way and say, Christian Science proves itself. Christian Science proves itself through metaphysical healing. We come to the next chapter, Genesis, a very long chapter, nearly 60 pages, and just a few references. We begin to feel now the question of healing subsides. It's no more so important, or it's more or less now solved. It's no more the question. And so we have in the whole first record of creation only two references for healing, or for healing disease, namely disease has no record in the first part, in the first record of creation. Disease has no record. It's not mentioned, Mrs. Eddy says. And she says that disease is nothing. So you arrive at the point, you see, where you now feel that disease is going out of the picture. It's there where God says to disease, I never made you. Nothing thou art, and unto nothing shalt thou return. And so she says that spiritual perception lifts you out of disease. Can you see how disease is just going out of the picture here slowly? Has no more its big claims that it is there where God says, I don't know you, I never heard of you, I never made you, I don't know who you are, and what you are, and what you want to do, I just don't know you. It's excluded. That chapter on Genesis has always somehow a tone of divine science where evil is excluded. And here again in this subject it brought out the same thing. We can, yes, and in regard to disease, she says here that disease has no record in the first chapter on Genesis. It is devoid of reality, is an illusion, is not included in the spiritual scientific fact of existence. Can you hear? Isn't it wonderful? It thrills me. I can't help it. It doesn't matter how you feel, but it thrills me that you can read 500 pages, you know, just 500 pages, many hundred references, they go into the thousands, of references about healing and about disease and about sickness, and only when you come finally to that chapter, she will say, you know, I don't know what you are, I never knew you, I never made you, I don't know what you are talking about. You are not there, I don't know what you are. Why didn't she say that right at the beginning? Why didn't she say it in the second chapter? Why not in the third chapter? Why not? Can you see how little by little she debunks, so to say, dismantles the claim of sickness and so on, until closer and closer as we approach to the end, she would say, well, disease does not know you, says to disease, nothing you are, and to nothing shalt thou return. And so we have that nice sense, oh yes, we must make an epitome here, and perhaps we could say here as an epitome that in God sickness has no record.